To continue today in our series that we've called Hope from the Ground. These are attitudes and behaviors that we know shouldn't be there in life, and we want to change them, but for whatever reason they're there. We have them. They're difficult to get rid of. And what we've been seeing is that God can bring growth even in the midst of these. Even in the struggles of our anger and our depression and our worry, in the midst of our greed and our addiction and our unhealthy relationships, God can actually work and bring growth from that, almost using all that bad stuff as fertilizer in our lives. It's amazing how God works. He can bring us up out of these things. And so today is just another example of this. Last week we talked about the idea of when we suffer from that anger and that worry and that despair, that often we try to untie that knot ourselves. Well, this is another example of what we often turn to instead of turning to God. We're talking about the topic of addiction. When we turn to things other than God to find happiness and try to get ourselves over these other issues. So before we start, I want to ask you to do something today. I want to ask you that on this topic, it's a very easy one to just look at others, to just look at other people. I want to challenge you not to do that. Instead, focus on yourself. In a town that is filled with recovery council buildings everywhere we look, it's tempting to say, okay, this is an other person problem. This is something that other people struggle with, but not me. Guys, what I want you to see today more than anything is all of us can struggle with addiction in some form or another. And so our license today is to not judge others and make this about somebody else. It's make it about us. Let God judge us. That's what you say, Josh, when you combine God and judge. Let God judge us and allow him to work on our hearts and show us where we might struggle with this. Addiction is a relatively modern term, but the idea has been around for centuries. The word itself was first used in just about 100 years ago, but previous to that, they would have called it a vice or a bad habit. Whatever you call it, the Bible speaks to this challenge that we have. And our central passage today will be 1 Corinthians 10, verses 12 through 14. If you have a Bible, you can turn there and camp out there. We'll be looking at each of these verses one at a time, or it'll be on your screens. Read with me. 1 Corinthians 10, 12 says, "Therefore, let anyone who thinks that he stands take heed lest he fall. No temptation has overtaken you that is not common to man. But God is faithful, and he will not let you be tempted beyond your ability. But with the temptation, he will also provide a way of escape that you may be able to endure it. Therefore, my beloved, flee from idolatry." Let's pray. God, as we look at this topic today, may we look at ourselves. Not look out into our community, not look at maybe people that we know struggle with different kinds of addictions, but really honestly look at our own heart. And God, if you should bring somebody else to mind, may that be with the proper motive of praying for them and being concerned for them and not judging them. God, open our eyes today. As you allow us to hear your word, may you open our eyes so that we could see our own lives the way you see them. And calls us to leave here changed because you've worked in our lives. We pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen. So where does addiction come from? This idea of addiction. Like I said, it's a more modern type word, but that it's always been there in the form of a bad habit or a vice. It starts with a basic desire, but then these desires grow out of control and they begin to consume our lives. Often the root desire is just something as simple as happiness. I just want to be happy. I want to feel happy. We look for something that will make us feel that way. Basically, at the end of the day, I just want to feel good. Everything else in my life seems to be rotten, and so I just want, even if it's just temporarily, I want to feel good. So we turn to these different things. So when a desire for wanting to be happy and looking at a particular way to do it meets the opportunity, we face what the Bible calls temptation. And temptation is when we face something we know is sinful, we know it's wrong, we know it's even bad for us, and yet we still desire that thing. we still want to choose that because we see the possibility for it to make us happy. Where does temptation come from? James tells us in chapter 1, verse 13. Let no one say when he is tempted, I am being tempted by God. For God cannot be tempted with evil, and he himself tempts no one. But each person is tempted when he is lured and enticed by his own desire. Then desire, when it is conceived, gives birth to sin, and sin, when it is fully grown, brings forth death. You get such a picture of addiction there, this idea of something that just started with a pretty simple desire. Like I said, often to be happy or to satisfy some sort of need, and then it blossoms out of control and ends up bringing death. So desire meets opportunity and temptation, and then if we give in to that temptation, even though we know it's not good for us, we give in to that temptation, and then something interesting happens. The next time we're faced with that temptation, it's even easier to give in. Have you noticed that? We give in once and we begin to rationalize and we say, oh, it's not that big a deal. It's not that bad. And we give in again. And then after we've done it two or three times, it gets even easier and easier to the point where we have a full-blown habit. We know it isn't good, but we found a way to even temporarily fulfill a desire, even if it's just briefly. So we begin this habit of turning to that opportunity again and again and again to the point where we don't even think about it anymore. That's when it becomes an addiction. You can write down this definition. Addiction is any repeated behavior in which we seek to fulfill a desire regardless of the consequences. An addiction has come in life when it's any repeated behavior in which we seek to fulfill a desire and we stop thinking about the consequences. It's something that I have to have. It's just something I've got used to having in my life. And without it, I feel like I'd fall apart. And so we seek this thing again and again and again. And as soon as we stop considering the consequences of what our actions are, or we just don't care anymore, that behavior has become an addiction. We can have an addiction to just about anything. Anything that we turn to fulfill this desire. The most common thing that comes to mind is drugs and alcohol. And these are the things that people typically think of when they hear the word addiction. People in a desperate moment or in a moment to maybe in their teen years, their young adult years, have turned to some sort of substance, whether it's a drug or alcohol, or maybe it's even been in later in life or during a time of despair. They've turned to some sort of substance and they begin to do it again and again. And studies have shown that actually starts to change the brain to the point where they feel like they need it all of the time. That's an addiction that it no longer has anything to do with the consequences. They turn to this for a temporary high again and again and again. Now, obviously, these substances has absolutely devastating consequences. Many of us know people, homes that have been wrecked by alcoholism, by someone who has become addicted to that temporary high. And the problem is the more you partake of that, the more your tolerance builds and the more you have to where it's consumed your entire life. Unfortunately, in this community and beyond, it seems statewide these days, maybe even countrywide, as we look at the heroin epidemic, the opiate epidemic that has hit our nation, it's people turning to this temporary high for a fix just to try to get over life, just try to get through the worry or the despair or the anger. And they turn to that thing again and again to the point where they've stopped considering the consequences. So now it's just a habit. It's just something they do automatically when they feel down. In fact, so much so that now we're not sure if is addiction more of a choice or is it more of a disease? Often what we see in people, it's a choice that leads to something that looks a little bit more like a disease. It's probably somewhere in between. But drugs and alcohol are not the only thing we can become addicted to. Pornography, rampant in our culture today, is something that many men and even women are addicted to. Gambling is another one. might not be a huge problem around here, but I've seen it. I've seen people wreck their lives. Both of these things, pornography and gambling, studies have shown that these activities excite areas of the brain that release neurotransmitters that make you feel good. And so in a way, both of these are a type of chemical addiction. It's just that the chemicals come from within your body instead of from outside of your body. In some ways, then, these can be just as addicting as substance abuse. Like I said, gambling might be an issue that you struggle with. Maybe it's pornography that I think is becoming as big or bigger than the heroin epidemic that we have in our nation. I read a study the other day on teens that have grown up with complete access to pornography are now having trouble in their young adult years as they're getting married, having sex with actual humans. It's become to the point where they're not real sure what a relationship is all about because they're used to a screen. Is that an addiction? Absolutely. There are plenty of other things that we don't think about as much. What about an addiction to food? Is that possible? What fits every single description that I just made? It's something that we turn to for comfort in times of need. There's somebody I'm working with, and I was so proud of her. She said to her drug counselor, who told her that, hey, I can't seem to get out of the kitchen. I just have a problem with food. And she said to her counselor, have you ever thought about all the things that you've taught us about drugs, just applying those to food? And she said her jaw just went, oh, no, I've never thought of that. But it's an addiction as much as anything else. We turn to it. What about something like shopping? If you're affluent, you can shop all you want, and it's not that big a deal. But if you're not, people can lead themselves into poverty through seeking, like what we talked about last week, seeking comfort in material things. Another one that I think is huge in our culture is entertainment. So many of us in here are addicted to being entertained. Somebody entertain me. I mean, maybe it's TV, movies, sports, the internet, whether it's Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, or we're just surfing the internet, or maybe it's video games. All of these fall under this umbrella of, I need to be entertained or else I'm going to have to focus on the real problems of my life. And so we seek this temporary high that then turns into something that we turn to again and again and again. All of these, in some way or another, create an easy hit to the pleasure center of our brains and calls us to keep coming back to them again and again. Remember our look at depression a few weeks ago? Part of the biological issue with depression was the brain wasn't making the chemicals that it was supposed to. Well, if you could get a quick hit from something else, then that thing that you're getting that quick hit from becomes pretty important in your life, doesn't it? And so instead of actually addressing problems or going through things, you turn to that addiction. You turn to that thing. And so with this in mind, let's look back at Paul's words that we've already read in 1 Corinthians for an understanding of our behavior and how to overcome it. Start first with verse 14. Understand why it even matters. The first point today is that addiction is basically just idolatry. What we see from Paul is this whole concept that I've just described to you and fill in the gap with whatever it is for you is really just idolatry. Verse 14, he says, therefore, my beloved, flee from idolatry. Everything he just described, he then summarizes as idol worship. Idolatry is just that. It's the worship of something else other than God. How do we define worship? I usually define worship as whatever gets my attention, my affection, and my allegiance. What I mean by that, what do I think about? Where do most of my feelings go? What do I spend most of my time doing? My attention, my affection, and my allegiance. We see rampant idolatry in the Old Testament, and we scoff at how silly those ancient Israelites were. We say, oh, they're dancing around their Asherah poles or sacrificing to Molech. They're just silly. Guys, we do the same thing. After a hard day, we turn to a bottle or a needle, or we plop ourselves down in front of a screen, or we open the refrigerator just to try to ease the pain. And after a while, it isn't a quick thing, and we stopped thinking about the consequences. It has become a habit that we don't even think about anymore. As soon as we stop thinking about those consequences, it has become an addiction. And so unknowingly, we've started to give something else our attention, our affection, and our allegiance. And what have we done then? We have made that thing, even if we don't realize it, we have made that thing into our God. We have made it into a little idol that we set up and gives us our comfort and helps us get through the day. That's why this is so important, guys. That's why when we look at this idea of addiction, it's not just, oh, I've got a bad habit or two. The problem is you might have another God or two. And that's where it starts to get very serious. Look at 1 Corinthians 10:12, a second principle that we see. Addiction is really just idolatry. But we also see from Paul that temptation can come at any time, even when you feel strong. 1 Corinthians 10:12. Therefore, let anyone who thinks that he stands, and some translations actually add stand strong, take heed, because he's about to fall. The step here is to recognize our weakness. Recognize that we are prone, we are addictive people, we are prone to worshiping other things. We are created to be worshiping beings. And so if idolatry is really just addiction, that leads to the fact that, okay, any one of us is open to a new addiction at any point. We have to recognize our weakness. The moment that we're arrogant in our own power and our own selves is usually the moment we fall. And so some of you are actually falling victim to this right now, because as you're sitting and listening, you're going, oh, this isn't my problem. That's often when we fall. Keep resisting, keep pushing back, but know that you are weak. Have you ever noticed that as far as temptation goes, you're tempted in two ways often. Number one, you're tempted when you feel strong, when you're on top of the world. I had a wise counselor tell me once that when you have a good day, when things are going well, that's when you need to be careful. But the second thing that I've noticed about temptation is I'm not usually tempted in the areas that I feel strong. This is what I mean by that. I'm usually tempted where I'm weak. If alcohol is not your thing, not your temptation, and you say, whew, okay, no problem there. Well, guess what? That's not where you're going to be tempted. You're going to be tempted by the chocolate, or by shopping, or by sitting down, plopping in front, and binge watching a series on Netflix. That's how you're going to be tempted, in those areas. And so often, notice this, we're tempted where we are weak, and we're tempted when we feel strong. We're tempted where we are weak, where we're most likely to give in, and we're tempted when we feel strong. That's the recipe. Why is that? Because temptation does come from ourselves. It comes from our world. But guys, we also have an active enemy. We have an enemy that is the tempter. The Bible calls him a lion. He's prowling around like a hunting lion, ready to pounce. If you notice, if you've ever watched the Nature Channel, the lion doesn't just hope that a gazelle happens to come by. He's not lazy. A lion is active. A lion is strategic. The same with our enemy. The enemy is not going to attack me in an area that I feel strong, in an area that I am strong. He's going to attack me when I feel strong in an area that I'm weak. That's how attack usually comes. Paul recognizes this struggle, that as long as we are in the flesh, we will struggle with fleshly desires. As maddening as that can seem, even after we've come to Christ, it's something we still struggle with. As long as we're wearing this flesh, we will struggle with fleshly things. He laments on this in Romans chapter 7, verse 15. He says, "For I do not understand my own actions, for I do not do what I want, but I do the very thing I hate. Now, if I do what I do not want, I agree with the law that is good. So now it is no longer I who do it, but the sin that dwells within me. For I know that nothing good dwells in me, that is, in my flesh. For I have the desire to do what is right, but not the ability to carry it out. For I do not do the good I want, but the evil I do not want is what I keep on doing. Now, if I do what I do not want, it is no longer I who do it, but sin that dwells within me." first step in overcoming addiction is to realize we're susceptible, we're weak. We are weak people. Even after we've come to Christ and Christ has set us free, and that's the beautiful thing. Paul goes on to say, look, these are now my choices. I am no longer a slave to sin. I am free from these things. But as long as I am in the flesh, it will continue to be this struggle back and forth. And so the first step is to simply recognize that, recognize our weakness, that when we think we stand strong, Paul tells us, take heed, because you might be about to fall. And then the last point we see is in 1 Corinthians 10:13. There's always a way out. There's always a way out. Now, I know there are some addictions that I listed that are far more serious than others in terms of consequences. Again, I don't mean to make a video game addiction sound like a heroin addiction. But I do want you to see both of them are becoming false gods in your life. And both of them have a way out. Even those who have turned to alcohol or drugs or pornography or gambling, these things that become almost this physical addiction, God promises a way out. Read verse 13 with me. No temptation has overtaken you that is not common to man. But God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond your ability. But with the temptation, he will also provide the way of escape that you might be able to endure it. What a beautiful promise. First of all, we see there that there is nothing that we face that surprises God. Everything that we face is common to man. I think sometimes we have trouble coming to God and asking God to help because we're kind of embarrassed at how evil we actually are, because we think, oh, he's surprised by our evil. That's ridiculous. There's nothing new under the sun. Everything that we struggle with is stuff that people have struggled with for millennia. And it doesn't surprise God. Instead of surprise in his faithfulness, he provides us a way out. We just have to take it. We just have to take it. Paul provides Timothy with some great advice on this. And this is one of my favorite verses when it comes to temptation, when it comes to things like addiction. 2 Timothy 2:22. When I've taught it before, I've said all you need is two. It's 2 Timothy 2:22. So that's all you have to remember. Two and Timothy, you can do it. This is what Paul writes to Timothy. So flee youthful passions and pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace, along with those who call on the Lord from a pure heart. Here's why I love this simple verse so much. Because contained within it has three strategies for us overcoming these temptations, even if they've become an addiction. Number one, he says, flee. Flee from these things. I love that word, run away. Notice it doesn't say flirt. Notice it doesn't say prove your strength by showing how you can stand up to it. No, what does he say? He says flee. Run away. I mean, this should be somewhat obvious to us, but we're slow. If you're an alcoholic, don't go in a bar. If you struggle with some other addiction, don't put yourself in a place where you can fall victim to it. Flee. I'm reminded of Joseph in Genesis, the patriarch Joseph, as he was sold into slavery serving Potiphar. And the text says that Joseph was a very good-looking young man. And so one day when he's in Potiphar's house and it's just him, himself and Potiphar's wife, who presumably was a good-looking woman, she comes on to him. And I love what he does. You know what he does? He flees. He runs. In fact, it says that Potiphar's wife still had his tunic in his hand. So Joseph is basically running down the streets in his underwear. He's like, I'm not getting anywhere near this. I'm out of here. Flee temptation. But the second thing that Paul tells Timothy here, flee youthful passions and pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace. So not only do we flee the thing that we're addicted to, we pursue the things of God. This is so important, guys, because you can't just say, okay, addiction, go away. It just doesn't do that, does it? Why? Because of what I would call displacement. Did you know there's actually no such thing as cold? If you've ever studied thermodynamics, we say it's cold, but there's no such thing as cold. Cold is just the absence of heat. The same is true of light and dark. There's actually no such thing as darkness. You can't, you know, we don't say, okay, there's darkness in this room, and so I'm going to throw this switch to turn on the darkness vacuum and suck all the darkness away. Doesn't do that, does it? What happens when we turn on the switch? We displace the darkness with light. And so that's why it's not enough to just say, addiction, go away. We have to be able to pursue something. So it's not just flee from that thing, but it's also pursue the things of God. And then finally in this verse, I love this phrase, you do all of this along with those who call on the Lord from a pure heart. Isn't that a beautiful little word, along? Just one word, one letter away from what we often think we are, alone. And that's not true. Alone is a lie. Along is where it's at. We do it along with other people. You don't go at it alone. You get help. You get accountability. You sit with someone else and you say, look, I'm struggling with these things and I want you to hold me accountable. And you're honest with other people. Don't go it alone. In fact, if there's something you're struggling with today, I'll even say this before we get to the time of response. You've got a card inside your bulletin or there's a card in the back of the pew. I encourage you, if this is something you need help on, get help now. Get help. Now, for the most part, you don't need our help finding someone to sit and talk with. But some people in here need professional help, and we can help you with that. We can find somebody. Whatever the case is, don't try to go at these addictions alone. So why does all this matter? Why do we even talk about addictions in here? Because at its heart, addiction is idolatry. It is worshiping something else. It's turning to something else for our satisfaction when we should be satisfied in God and God alone. We must know our weaknesses. We must know when we're weak, where we're weak, where we're often going to be attacked, and make sure we don't put ourselves in those situations. Then we must flee from these things through the way out that God has provided and get help with others who are pursuing God. That's how we take a look at, or we attack these addictions, whether it's shopping or heroin. All of them become fake gods in our lives, and that's why it matters. A couple of decades ago, an organization started very similar to a 12-step program, and their 12-step programs are phenomenal. They do a great job. But a church started one in particular that wanted to make sure the focus was on that higher power and identify that higher power was Jesus Christ. And so it was an organization called Celebrate Recovery, and I want to read through their principles with you as we close. If this is something you would like a copy of, I've got some sitting up here and some on the table as you go out that door, or you can send me an email. But these are all principles that we've seen today that you can begin to live in your life based on what addiction you have. R, it spells out the word recovery. R is realize that I'm not God. I admit that I'm powerless to control my tendency to do the wrong thing and that my life is unmanageable. E, earnestly believe that God exists, that I matter to him, and that he has the power to help me recover. C, consciously choose to commit all my life and will to Christ's care and control. Let me pause there real quick. This is for those of you who do not have Christ in your life today. If you do not, that is where it must start. Is recognize there is a God that cares about you. And so come to Christ today. O stands for openly examine and confess my faults to myself, to God, and to someone that I trust. V, voluntarily submit to any and all changes that God wants to make in my life and humbly ask him to remove my character defects. E, evaluate all my relationships. Offer forgiveness to those who have hurt me and make amends for harm that I've done to others when possible, except for when to do so would harm them or others. R, reserve a time with God for self-examination, Bible reading, and prayer in order to know God and his will for my life and to gain the power to follow his will. And then finally, why yield myself to God to be used to bring this good news to others, both by my example and by my words. An addiction can easily become a very casual thing, something that we often overlook. We just turn to it out of habit. But it is not something that can be overcome with casual Christianity. It's something that must be overcome by turning to God daily. Just showing up to church every once in a while and trying to change yourself, that is not what is being taught here. That is not what is being commanded. It is you must let God do this work in your life. And that means turning to him daily. That means coming to Christ. And so for some of you, that might be the very first time that you've done that. You do it this morning. You say, I want to follow Christ. Too often we can fall into a horrible trap. And we use phrases like, it isn't that bad. Come on, pastor, you've made it out to be like the end of the world. Well, you know what? If you have another God in your life, if you read through this book, it is. And so this is not just, hey, we're playing around with something. This is you have created an idol in your life. And the Bible condemns it at every turn. Another lie we buy into is I can quit whenever I want. So yes, there are some addictions that have far worse consequences than others. But let me close with just one simple question as we stand to sing. Has something else become God in my life? Would you stand? And as we sing today and as we close, ask yourself that very question. Has something else become God in my life? Is there an idol that I've established that I worship on a regular basis, maybe unconsciously, unknowingly? And how can I give that to God? Let's sing.